Good evening, Hong Kong. Happy International Women's Day. My name is Sonali Figueres, and we're live on air with my co-host Regina Larco.
Hello.
This is the first episode of A Zero Waste Journey live on air, which is a brand new audio interview series about the whole zero waste movement. We're going to be covering topics like plastic pollution, recycling, fashion waste, paper waste, food waste, living plastic free, and so much more. And today's episode is going to tackle what we feel is one of the most important issues of our time, which is marine plastic pollution. So it's called Plastics Versus the Oceans, Why You Should Care. And we hope at the end of the hour you're gonna care deeply and make changes. Quickly, I'd like to say a big special thank you to Garage Academy for sponsoring our location. We're really grateful to Hey You and their whole team. They've been amazing. And I'm going to pass it over to Regina, who is going to introduce our incredible superstar panel.
Yeah, so we are so thrilled sitting here with you today. An amazing panel of green warriors, may I call you like that? Because they're not just raising awareness about marine conservation issues and plastic pollution, but they are really walking the talk by taking action, and that's what we love about them. First of all, I want to welcome Dana Vinograd, Director of Operations at Plastic Free Seas. And she says, we all have a role to play to make changes. Dana, welcome. Can you give our listeners a little bit of a teaser, so to say, what Plastic Free Seas is all about and what your role in the organization is?
Oh, thank you very much for having me. Plastic Free Seas focuses on education. We feel education is super important. It's the foundation for how we can move forward and help solve this problem. So we have reached over 29,000 students since 2013 when we started, and I'm very deeply involved in pretty much all aspects of the organization, from doing the talks with nursery school students all the way up to university and everything else. And when what you said about all of us having our role to play, it's every individual, every business, the government, we all have something to do to help solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dana. And we're so excited to hear more about this. We also welcome Samantha Lee. She is manager of Oceans Conservation at WWF Hong Kong. And Samantha says, we have to be proactive rather than reactive, so we can keep the marine life, not just for our generation. It is important that we fight this battle. Welcome, Samantha.
Hi, everyone. I'm really glad to be here. For the ocean conservation program that we have in WWF, basically we work on four main pillars, like Chinese white dolphin conservation, destination of marine protected area, sustainable fisheries, and also on Marilita. So under the Marilita program, we mainly engage local communities or some marine-related stakeholders, such as the yacht club, dive club, and we would try to engage them and to have them to reduce the production of the plastic from point source.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And what is also amazing is that we're sitting together here with so many power women on International Women's Day.
Big woman supporter, Gary
yes.
Stokes. Who's next?
Who is next? Although we have gathered these amazing women, we couldn't wish for a more amazing man to join us today on International Women's Day. Gary Stokes, very warm welcome to you. He's Southeast Asia Director of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society.
Global, Sea Shepherd Global, sorry.
Oh, sorry, we're going to make a correction here. Sea Shepherd Global.
Sorry.
Just like that.
Yep.
Yes. And Gary says, the appetite for plastics is out of control. Fortunately, there is greater awareness of the problem now. A massive wake-up call has just occurred in the last 6 months. Gary, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about Sea Shepherd and what you're doing.
It's great to be here on Women's Day. So, with some great women. what are we doing with Sea Shepherd in Asia? And I basically look after Asia in general, and then on a localized level in Hong Kong, where I'm based. We tend to focus more on the investigation work, on trying to find out where this trash is coming from. I was exposed to plastic from Dana's partner, Tracy, when we had the plastic pellet spill, and that opened up my eyes. And we've been focusing now on marine debris around the world, but also in Hong Kong. So, yeah, mainly working on more the investigation work, where it's coming from, working with the government, things like that, and also going out and trying to remove debris from the oceans if we find it in hard to get places like ghost nets and things like that.
Wow, so we've got investigation, we've got education, we've got actual kind of programs to work with the government and the existing regulations. So we've really got all sides covered here. So I want to take a couple of steps back and introduce to the audience that's listening why we care about plastic pollution or marine litter. So for many people, the big issue of plastic in the oceans happened in about 1985, 1988, when scientists discovered this big gyre in the northern Pacific Ocean that is now christened the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. I think that was the first time that in the media there was an uproar about how much debris and plastic waste was in the ocean. A 2017 study tells us that since 1950, 9.1 billion tons of plastic have been produced, and 7 billion tons of that is no longer in use. So you can only imagine where it's gone. Only 12% was incinerated, 9% recycled, so that's 5.5 billion tons of plastic litter in oceans and land. And I think that the figure that's quoted very often is that 8 million tons of plastic enter our oceans each year, but actually I found a more recent statistic from the UN that says it's closer to 12.7 million tons. By 2050, if we don't do anything, we're going to have more plastic than fish in the sea. So I think this is a crisis of global proportions. Most people put this on the same level as climate change, as an absolute issue that we need to be talking about all the time. And obviously, as Gary said, we have noticed as well at Green Queen, because we look at what people are searching for and asking for, we have noticed a much bigger interest and awareness level in plastics and plastic pollution and what we can do to fight that. And so that's how this discussion happened. So I think some of you've all covered this a little bit, but my first question, which is for all of you, is how did you become involved specifically in the fight against plastic? Because obviously you all work in a greater purview. Maybe we start with Samantha.
Yeah, so I really would say that this all because of Gary. Dated back to 2012. So at that time, we did not have any program on marine litter on plastic. So basically one day is we received emails from Gary, and then basically he was raising issues, sent us some pictures and saying that, because of the typhoon signal number 10 and some cargo containing some tons of plastic pellets being blown into the sea. And then actually Gary and Tracy were the first ones to found that this kind of impacting the shoreline, particularly in the southern waters of Hong Kong. So at that time, honestly, we did not really take it very serious. We kind of found that, was it very exaggerating? And then we saw the pictures and found that, it was really shocking. So then we responded to Gary's call. We formed some teams to look at some outlying islands got impacted by this plastic pellet. And then it was just so shocking because like everywhere plastic pellet, it's just like having snow in Hong Kong, everywhere was white. So since then, to me, I also got really shocked because I was the person who also used disposable. I didn't really care about using how much plastic in daily life. But since then, because during that day, we also searched in different outlying islands, and we also saw that piles of plastic marine debris, for example, like flip-flops, plastic bottles, plastic bag, some fishing net were lying on the beach. And for even some of the remote island, basically we could see that no one have ever been there to clean. Also some lot of marine litter in the sea caves. So since then I just got, well, actually that was the time, a moment of change. Then I started to think, okay, Now I really can see it, witness it, and it's time for me to change and also to pass on this message to different people in Hong Kong. Because at that time, people around me, basically, they didn't really care about the impact from plastic or the plastic marine debris.
Fascinating. Dana, so, oh, wow, I couldn't be more happy to find out that Samantha was inspired by the two of you that are sitting right here. So I guess that's kind of the birth of Plastic Free Seas has a lot to do with what Samantha's talking about.
To some extent, it actually started a lot, quite a bit earlier than that for Tracy and I. So we've been involved in a community green group in Discovery Bay since 2007. We started doing beach cleanups at that time. And of course, we became aware of the issue of plastic on the beaches washing up way back then. We started doing more talks, we started learning more about this issue. And in 2012, the summer of 2012, actually before the pellets bill, Tracy decided, you know what, we've had so many questions about this Great Pacific Garbage Patch, I want to go see it. So she got on an expedition to go through the Great Pacific Garbage Patch to actually do research and find out what it was, because we got so many questions and we didn't really know much more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So Tracy did this trip, and while she was out there, she decided, that's it, we're starting a charity. It has to be done. So she came back with the idea of, we are starting Plastic Free Seas. Well, didn't have the title, I don't think, at that point. To educate people on this issue, it's huge. And basically, I think it was the day after or 2 days after she arrived back in Hong Kong with this decision, she went down to the beach and discovered the plastic pellet spill. Mm-hmm. And she had learned about these pellets while she was on the expedition, because they were things that were being found. And she knew what it was and was able to kick off with Gary and the team the whole process of the plastic pellet spill cleanup, which we were involved with for at least 3 months of straight cleaning of the beaches. And that just, so that in effect did help kick off Plastic Free Seas.
Wow.
But it had a much earlier start, this whole issue of plastic. We've been dealing with it for a long time already, many monthly beach cleanups. We knew there was a problem, and we knew we wanted to do something about it. So it's been a long process to get to Plastic Free Seas, but it's been able to rise quickly since then, our ability to spread the word and raise awareness and hopefully make change happen.
What an amazing story. Well, I guess we have the third part of the story.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to duplicate a little bit.
No.
I'm going to put all the blame on Tracy Reed. and if you're here listening to this, I'm overseas, Tracy, yes. It's your fault. I mean, I love sharks and wildlife, and that's what I do. I've told, you know, I do wildlife protection, really. And then one afternoon, I got a call from Tracy, who was frantic and manic, but she had plastic on the brain, because like Dana said, she just got back off a trip. Quick, grab your cameras, come to the North Plaza Beach. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I get there, and it was literally like Sam said, it snowed. I mean, we're talking over a foot deep. And the funniest part of it all was Tracy had actually gone down to the beach with a little sauce container that you get for your takeaways, a little ketchup, like sort of, you know, little plastic container, to try and find some nurdles, that's these pre-production plastic pellets, for a school project. So she went down to try and fill up this thing, and you know, when it rains it pours, and it was literally covering the entire beach. And I've got a great photo of her holding this little plastic container going, whoa.
I'm very excited to say that Tracy Reed is actually just logged on and is listening to you right now. So hi Tracy, thank you for everything.
So yeah, it was kind of her fault, and then with that we jumped into action and started trying to mobilize the government, and you know, because of that, like Sam said, I put out a call of action just to try and get help from the other NGOs to try and get on board. And then we all sectioned up everything and divided it up. And spending 3 months on the beach with all this plastic, shooting rubbish pictures, literally. Yeah, that's when I realized the magnitude, like Sam said, you know, that's, we all use it every day. But when you actually start seeing it on that scale, that was when we realized that it's the size of the issue that it is, you know. And also obviously starting to see all the wildlife and the threat to wildlife.
Right. Both you and Samantha work in wildlife conservation a great deal. And so I think our next question is going to be for Samantha. And obviously, I'm sure you all have great things to say about it, but we'll start with you. How serious is the marine plastic pollution problem globally?
Yeah, so basically, you can find plastic anywhere in the sea. Because sometimes, for example, people say, oh, I don't believe of the impact because when I go to the resort, it's all clean. The sea is clean, the beach is clean. Yes, because the people go to the wrong place and you have everyone go there every day, every morning, every afternoon to clean up the litter. But if you go somewhere remote, basically you'll be really shocked. You could find piles of marine debris lying on the beach untouched. Even though, for example, if you go to the seaside, you may not be able to find some obvious the plastic litter. But actually, if you look closely, you could find tiny bits, and it is really shocking that you can find litter in the shallow area. But basically, we have the deepest Mariana Trench in the world. Basically, you still can find a lot of plastic litter down there, and because there's no so deep and there is no sunlight, basically they cannot really got degraded. They will be there forever and ever. Wow. So that is really shocking, and I think all of people know that because of that garbage gyre, because of the current bring a lot of plastic fragment, different things together in different places. So the people say, oh no, I don't think it's true, but because most of that kind of plastic, they already be degraded or fragmented into very tiny microplastic. A lot of exhibition research go, they go there and use to throw the sample. Basically, they describe that the fish there, they are swimming in a plastic soap. You cannot really see pieces of plastic, but if you throw it, you can see tiny plastic pellet. And plastic will not disappear. They will just break further down, smaller and smaller piece, and to exist in this world in different form. So, so it's really, I just feel it's like when I talk about it, I always have some goosebumps already because it's like I feel hopeless. And not to mention that actually at least 8 million tons of plastic enter the ocean every year, which equals to the content of one garbage truck dumped into the world's oceans every minute. And why we have so much marine litter, the litter in the sea, basically 60-80% they're from land. People will think, no way, I always put my litter into the rubbish bin, it's not my fault. But basically this could be fall off from into the stream, into the pipeline, different ways that they eventually end up in the sea. And also very shocking, it's globally 663 marine species has been recorded to have affected by entanglement in or ingestion of plastic debris. Like you could see, we can always find like sea turtles, or even like some whales, or even like a lot of seabirds. You can find a lot of plastic content in the guts. So
like the famous seagull photo.
Exactly. So that really plastic debris, this impact actually is everywhere, but seeing is believing. A lot of people, they cannot really see it, and they just kind of like out of sight, out of mind. I don't really care, but actually it's impacting our marine ecosystem in the world.
And I think it's what you've just said is it's impacting our health, because a lot of what you're saying is it's in the fish. There's a crazy article telling you about how it's in your salt. And so I think people are not realizing that the plastic degrades, as you said, into the tiny little pieces and then just stays in our ecosystem and in our food system and in our bodies.
Yeah, there is a very recent research paper talk about some scientists, they work on this microplastic, how it transfers from trophic level. So they found that they feed some fish with microplastic, and then they found that actually it will also go up to the seal, although they do it in captive way, but they found that actually it will go up to different level. And also some local scientists, they also found that if the fish kind of like live under some environment with high microplastic content, the growth rate will be slower, which just discovered by a local professor. And some people also say that actually Hong Kong, some species, they also found that some species in mudflat in Hong Kong, actually most of them contain microplastic in their body, for example, like clams. People like clam digging,
50%.
They eat entire clam. Basically, the people are eating also the plastic, the microplastic into their body. but the people, they don't know about
it. They don't realize it. So that's a great segue into our next question, which is, how serious, so we've got a kind of an overview globally, but how serious is the marine litter problem in Hong Kong today? Dana.
Go to any beach in Hong Kong and you can't avoid seeing plastic. Like Sam said, some of the beaches are cleaned regularly all day long, so you don't see it when you first get there, but all you have to do is walk to the back of the vegetation line and you will definitely find, if not large pieces of plastic, microplastics broken down. And it's not just a little bit on the tide line, it's all the way down. You can literally dig down into the soil and you will find lots and lots of microplastics. So this problem is very serious. You ask, how serious is it? It's very serious. If you have a beach that isn't cleaned regularly, the amount of rubbish is unbelievable. We, WWF and Plastic Free Seas and a number of other NGOs participated in a press event at a beach called Lac Sap Wan a few years ago now, where we basically had to hack our way down beforehand to get through to this beach because nobody goes there. It's near a marine park, and the amount of rubbish there was, you know, it could have been waist high in some areas, and it was incredible. It took the government 3 months to get all of the rubbish off of the beach, and unfortunately it's come back now. Incredible. So it just depends where you go, but rubbish is a huge problem in Hong Kong. And you mentioned the research. We have done some research with Hong Kong University with how much plastic has been ingested by fish, and they found that 50% of the fish tested was found to have plastic in it. We also had a program where we did trawling, like you were talking about, done around the world, trawling for microplastics, and we don't have the final numbers yet, but most of the samples contained microplastics in several different locations.
Can you remove microplastics from the sea? I mean, there something that can, how do we get rid of it? That's the problem.
So you can use nets, but you can't take a net and go throughout all of the waters of the world. A, it's too vast, and B, you're going to be collecting plankton, you're going to be affecting other species, and of course plankton gives us more than 50% of our oxygen, so we don't want to be messing with our, you know, the organisms in our ocean. So microplastics are not going to be removed from the ocean. We need to stop it at source and get it before it breaks down into microplastics.
And all plastics break down eventually into microplastics. I don't think people are clear on that.
Yes, all plastics will break down. It's the UV light.
You said something about UV light.
UV light will make it brittle, easy for it to break down. Plastics like polystyrene inherently break down into small pieces very easily. It doesn't need the sunlight.
And polystyrene is very present here in Hong Kong. I mean, people still get, you know, their cha su fan in a polystyrene box daily, which is different from a lot of parts of the world where that has become a regulated substance.
It's trying to anyway.
Is there movement on that here?
There's movement from the public. Right now there is a campaign. If you want to go to support.hk, you can find a online campaign asking the government not to stop the use of polystyrene, which is fantastic. The other thing we have to remember is that Hong Kong has one of the highest per capita rates of fish consumption in the world.
Right.
And then when you marry that with all of the microplastics that are in the water and that the fish are eating the plastic, it's definitely getting in our food chain and something that the people of Hong Kong need to be concerned about.
Yeah, I think that's something that's very clear from the discussion so far. And Gary, since you are a conservationist at heart and a wildlife lover, tell us in a more simple way, how does plastic pollution in the ocean affect marine life?
Well, just to follow up on that last bit there, I mean, it's so apparent now that, you know, the example I always use is if you go into the bathroom and your bath is overflowing, what do you do? Do you grab a mop or do you turn the tap off? Which do you do first? And that's the way I look at the whole marine pollution problem. We need to turn the tap off. We've got to stop it at source, like Dana says, going in there first. Then we can try and work out how to clean it up. Trying to clean it up now without stopping it going in it's just fruitless. And
it's like using a mop, basically.
Well, we'll all, Sam as well, we go to the beach, we do a beach cleanup, it's great, and the next day it's trashed again. And you can keep cleaning it and keep cleaning it and keep cleaning it, but we need to turn the tap off. So, yeah, that's the fundamental thing that we need to do, and that comes from governments and, as we said, everybody just stop using single-use plastic and find an alternative. So that's, you know, the sort of root cause of the problem. But as to how it affects marine life, well, I mean, we've all seen the internet pictures of, you know, turtles with straws up their nose and seals with nets around them, you know, around their neck, and the albatross pictures that Chris Jordan took on Midway Island with their guts just full of plastic. You know, I mean,
Are all fishing nets made of plastic?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I wanted to clarify that for everyone.
Yeah, so, and the thing is, you know, they're... A lot of these nets, especially the ghost nets, like the ones we find in Hong Kong, they're made of monofilament, which is just a really, really fine, you know, almost like tiny, you know, it's just tiny. And it's so cheap. And when it gets caught on rocks or things like that, it just rips and tears. And the fishermen just, it's just, it's so cheap, they just abandon it and just throw it overboard. So then you end up having these nets sitting in the ocean, which are just constant killers. They will stay there forever unless they're removed. They'll just sit there as a net and fish swim into them and just get stuck. And it's not just fish, we're also looking at marine, you know, mammals and turtles and things like that. I went out, we did a recovery of a dead turtle just off Poyo a few years back, and that spawned a load of the paddle community on South Lantau to rally around, and we said, right, let's go and get some of these nets. And we sort of declared war on this one stretch of coast, and what, 200 meters of coastline, we got 4 tons of net.
Oh my goodness.
We didn't even touch the surface. And that was because fishermen used to take the nets and they would send them back to China and they would actually, you know, repair them and things. But now they're so cheap, they just dump them. And the guy from China doesn't come to collect them anymore because it's so cheap, they just use them.
So basically, big story here, so plastic is too cheap.
It's far too cheap. And, you know, when you look at it, it's, we use it for the, you know, we use a substance that lasts forever for something that we only use for 2 minutes, 10 minutes, you know? That's the insanity that we're using. Plastic is actually a really good substance. It's a really good material if you want to make something that's going to last forever, but not a straw or a cup or a bottle that we're going to use for 2 minutes. So, and that's the issue. I mean, it's a big issue to discuss, and we don't have long enough.
Absolutely not. But I think we do need to discuss... China has changed the game a little. In 2017, at the end of the year, they announced that no more were they going to be the world's recycling, plastic recycling dump, and other recycling as well. So I see now, you know, been reading there's buildup of plastics in the UK and Canada and Ireland. And actually here on our docks in Hong Kong, which a lot of people are not necessarily aware of. So Samantha, what are we going to do about it? How is Hong Kong going to keep up now that China doesn't want to take the waste? I know Indonesia and Vietnam and Malaysia are stepping in. Is that a good thing?
Well, for this new waste policy, basically this impacts the entire world. Because since 1980s, China has become the world's largest importer of waste, all this foreign trash. They receive a lot of unsorted rubbish, for example, like from household plastic waste to unsorted paper, recycled textile, and different things. And but actually, this bring in multi-billion dollars to the China. So they a lot of village they do, they before they work on this recycling industry. But it was quite shocking that actually China, they also a lot of countries like US, UK, Australia, they exported over 70%, even 80% of their recyclables to China before. And even Hong Kong, we also exported 90% of our recycle to China. Because we do not have any recycling facilities. So because of this ban, starting from 1st of January of 2018, now the China only accepts three types of paper, which is newspaper, the cotton board paper, and also the office paper, and two types of plastic, which is type 1 and 2. Type 1 is PET, type 2 is HDPE, which is basically most of them are the bottle shapes, either Type 1 is the water bottle, the transparent ones, or from the soda, some of the soda drinks. Type 2 is mainly the household bottle, for example, for the bleach.
Detergent, like that. Where it's colored plastic.
So it creates a lot of mess and confusion among Hong Kong people, because first is people used to have practice like I recycle. If you recycle, then every people they recycle all the big things they collect at home. But now often they find confused because how come you just collect two types of plastic? And so does it mean that because sometimes you purchase from the supermarket like fruit or like raw meat, you come with that plastic tray, which is either type 4 or type 5. Does it mean that I need to dump into the rubbish bin? And again, it also links to another issue, is that because the government have been talking about the waste charging. So before, suppose you encourage recycle so that I could reduce the waste, to dump into rubbish bin. But now you refuse to collect the other type of plastic. And then so my rubbish bin could be filled very full very easily. And then and on the other way, you will say that, oh, I want to charge you more money because of you create a lot of waste. So people find it really confusing. In Hong Kong, so at the moment, the Hong Kong government, they just receive this few type of plastic. But luckily, a lot of local communities, they stand up and then they go to different districts. During weekends, they put some carbon box on the ground and encourage the people, don't throw away all these different types of plastic. Come and bring them to us, and then we will connect with the recycler in Hong Kong and try to recycle these different types of plastic, because they just don't want to dump these all in the landfill, because the landfill
we're going to run out of space
very soon. And then we don't have incinerator yet, and also incinerator actually will cause some environmental problems.
Of course.
Yeah, so
I also think globally, you know, people always think, oh, all these countries are so green and they recycle everything, and then the dirty little secret is that actually 70% of their waste is being sent to China. So
exactly,
I think that's something to think about, because I think sometimes in the West, you know, people can think, okay, well, we're doing everything right. But I think consumers don't know, because we don't have good chain of custody on the waste.
That's right. And also when we talk to our colleagues in the other countries, and then we ask, does it really impact you guys in the country very much? They said a lot of company, and also they were in panic, because they could not ship these kind of like plastic to China now. And then they are looking for some countries just like what you mentioned, Vietnam, Indonesia, but their recycling capacity is not as big as China. So they already got saturated. And so a lot of government, they need to start to think, they also need to do, start to have planned, for example, to build recycling facility, composting facilities to cope with this change. But a lot of people say, oh, China, they kind of like push this policy too quickly. Actually, people only have 6 months to react. So, and just have too many countries, they rely heavily on China to receive their foreign garbage. So a lot of company or other cities, they're still coping with, they are still kind of like accumulating this kind of plastic in their own country.
And I think this goes back to what Gary said, which is we actually need to stop. We need to stop mopping and start turning off the tap.
I think the announcement from China was great. I actually really applaud them, because, you know, it's just woken up everybody to go, oh my God, what are we going to do with our trash now? You know, and yeah, like you say, I mean, I'm sick and tired of everybody blaming China for everything. And,
agreed.
You know, and then they send all their trash there. And now they say they don't want the trash. And then suddenly they're going to go, oh my God, now what do we do with it? You know? The worrying thing is that, you know, similar to the Hong Kong government, they're just going to say, let's build an incinerator and burn it. That's the easiest thing. Out of sight, out of mind. It's just gone, poof, it's gone. But it's not. I mean, that's going to cause
Do incinerators so much. Impact ocean the oceans?
Well, you still, when you burn, you still end up with all the ash afterwards. So it only reduces it down. You know, some of it gets burnt off. The rest of it is this ash, and that's toxic as well.
Okay.
That's got to go somewhere. Whether it goes to landfill, or whether it, you know, ends up in the, you know, in the water systems, you know, it's not the solution. But what it is going to do is it's going to get everybody thinking really, really quickly, and it's going to help us with putting pressure on
plastic-free living.
On the producers. I mean, the people, the Coca-Colas of the world who, you know, keep making all these plastic bottles.
Yeah, and I think going back to chain of custody, like, you produce it, you're responsible for knowing where it goes. And it turns out a lot of Europeans and Americans, and they didn't know where the stuff was going.
Nope.
They thought, okay, we've sent, you know, I put it in my local recycling plant. Okay, I'm done.
And one of the things that we see on the beaches here, I mean, everybody says, oh, all our trash comes from China. Well, it doesn't. I mean, it's just a mix. I mean, you go down the beach, you can see Hong Kong brands and mainland brands. But one of the things that we were watching a year ago when we were doing an investigation was when we had that big influx in the summer. We're seeing all the low-grade, cheap, non-value sort of plastics, which some of them had already been recycled. They'd already gone to a facility and been sorted. And we were getting all these little, you know, the little plastic cups that you get with the water fountains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing all those. Those can't be used. There's no value. And a lot of them already have mud on them. And this had already been in a landfill somewhere. And when they had a heavy flood or rain, it just washed out. So we had all this coming down as well. So we're getting all the low trash.
So that was going to be my next question, which is, what are the worst offenders in terms of the marine plastic? What do you mean by low grade trash, I think, for listeners?
Well, I mean, if you go down the beach, you'll be pushing it hard to try and find a can, an aluminium can. Why? Because they've got value. You know, they get collected. You look at things like bottles and things. We do see bottles. I mean, Dana is probably the best on this, but we do get bottles. But then when you look down at those are the bits you notice. You know, like Sam was saying, you know, you see the polystyrene boxes and the bottles and the things like that, but it's actually the smaller stuff that builds up and actually makes the sort of foundation of all the trash on the beach, which is the microplastics. You get little shreds of polythene. You know, some of them we see have already been cut into squares, and they're all the same. You know, so these have already been processed. But
so what you're saying is stuff that's already been recycled.
Well, not necessarily recycled, because recycled means it's gone into something else. It's been sorted. So you've had the stuff that can be used or recycled, and then the stuff that can't, and that gets put into a pile, and whether it accidentally falls into the river or whatever, or it gets washed in, you know. So
I also want to quickly talk about microbeads. I think there's the microbeads in the products that seems to have caused a global outcry, and there's a lot more regulation on that, right? And microbeads are different than the microplastics. And then also, there was a really scary headline that came out last year. You know, your yoga pants are killing the oceans. And that's because a lot of yoga pants, for the listeners, are made from synthetic fabrics that are made from microfibers, which are tiny plastic threads that end up in our oceans. What do you guys have to say about that?
Okay, I'll start with the microbeads.
Mm.
So they are very small pieces, balls of plastic that are in our exfoliating products to start with. They're in a lot of products, but let's just take body care exfoliating products. So we used to use natural products like nuts and sugar, salt, that sort of thing, which is biodegradable, but they changed to plastic because it was more economical. It also sounded very sciencey, very, you know,
microbeads, yeah.
It must be good. And it could also be color coordinated for marketing purposes. And it also was made very uniform. So it was gentle on your skin, and they touted this as a positive. So gentle on your skin that you could use it every day. So of course they could sell more products.
Right.
So hence we have a lot of products with plastic in them. Now these plastic particles do wash down your drain and end up out in sea, where they can be ingested by any type of filter feeding animal out there.
And they cannot be removed from the sea.
Well,
similar type of thing.
It's the same problem with microbes. You can if you have a fine net. And you
but then you're affecting the plankton.
Exactly.
Okay, so again,
so
we're stuck with it.
This is something, it may only be a small part of the overall problem, but it is something that can easily be stopped. We can turn off the tap for this product very easily. It doesn't need to be in the product, and we can stop that there, go back to natural alternatives. So that's an easy one. The US has changed,
Australia,
UK. You know, there are a number of countries who have, and luckily after we've been pushing the government since 2013 on this, they have finally put it forward as an issue to study.
Okay.
Which is fabulous. So thank you very much, Hong Kong government. Because all they have to do is say, we're not going to allow this product to be sold just like the US and everyone else. So that's a great start. Now, the microfibers, it's funny, you know, they targeted yoga pants, but it's actually all
synthetic clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
And, but it's different types. So your fleeces, they have short fibers. They're much easier to come away when you're in washing, as opposed to other types that are long fibers in yarn, which are less likely, but still a problem. So there needs to be a solution to this. You know, synthetic fibers aren't going away.
It's also cheaper, so fast fashion, people buy it all the time, right?
Exactly. But, you know, I think the companies are looking at this. There are lots of different ways to handle this, but people themselves have to decide what type of material do I want to buy and how many times do I have to wash my fleece jacket. That's where you start, you know. I don't need to wash it every week. I'm going to...
Because you're saying every time you wash it,
yes,
there's debris. Away.
That's how it's getting into the ocean. So you wash it, it goes through the washing machine, out, it's finer than the system to capture.
Another one, just to let people know, is it all started with good intentions, but you know, you see these fibers now, these fabrics that were made from recycled plastic bottles taken from the beach
and
everything
fabric.
Else, you know, and it all sounds great. It's like, wow, we just got our t-shirts and they were made from, you know, 10,000 recycled bottles or whatever it was, you know. Well, those also, when you wash it, they break down. That fiber goes back in.
Okay, so I don't think people know that. That's fascinating.
That's, you know, that's something else to bear in mind. It's greenwashing in a way. But it's also, a lot of the time, it's people actually trying to do the right thing.
Right, it's well-intentioned greenwashing.
I had
someone say to me once that they hated the eco fabrics because actually there's some very small studies that show that prolonged plastic on your skin is actually not good for your skin either. Mm. So there's another approach, which is like the health concern, but this is really interesting. I don't think people are aware that when they're washing their synthetic fabrics and their recycled plastic fabrics, that there's a debris, right, Regina?
I
mean, as a mom, right? You're thinking
there's a lot of washing going on in our
right,
house. Yeah.
Right, and yeah. I mean, I mean, people, places like Uniqlo and H&M. I mean, they're using these fabrics, you know, and kids are wearing all this stuff.
It's not only lower end.
Of course not.
Lower end
affects more people because they're buying it. So
but it's also, I mean,
it's cheaper.
There are different products. I mean, we're a sea shepherd, a part of a collective called Parley for the Oceans, and that's with Pharrell Williams and Adidas and people like that, right? We had a campaign in the Southern Ocean where we were chasing illegal fishermen. We retrieved 70 kilometers of the net. We handed that to Adidas. They turned that and used it into their shoes. Mm. Now, does that fit into the same category? I guess it could, but how often do you wash your shoes, sort of thing? You know, so
but what about when you dispose of the shoe?
They will actually recycle them. So that's
okay.
Saying. So there are some aspects where it could be used.
And this is where it's a complicated issue.
So if they were using that into a rugby shirt or a t-shirt or something, then obviously that's not going to work.
If you're going to be using a nylon polyester to make something, is it not better to at least use recycled plastic
than
virgin plastic?
Yeah,
so
that's all a balance.
Don't let Greek be the enemy of good, like we were saying. I mean, you got to live.
Yes, exactly.
So, well, this is a perfect segue into the next question, which is how responsible are the companies that make all the plastic when it comes to marine pollution? I mean, I saw that, you know, there was that English journalist, Oliver Tickle, who said that actually marine plastic pollution violates international law. He quoted the UN, United Nations Convention of the Law of the Sea, which I don't think people think about a lot. And then you've got, obviously, the supermarkets going plastic-free in the Netherlands. Iceland in the UK is saying we're going to eliminate plastic. Obviously, there are some countries that are really taking the lead, like France and Taiwan. They're saying we're going to ban single-use plastic by a certain date. But then you have a very depressing statistic, like new facilities built like corporations by like Exxon and Shell that are going to fuel a 40% rise in plastic production in the next decade. That came out this week. So where does the corporation fit in? And how? I mean, we live in a consumerist world, a capitalist forward world, and whether we agree or not, how does this work? I mean, is Uniqlo responsible for using, for pushing fleece, you know? I mean, where are we at?
I think a lot of the producers do, you know, pass the buck on to the consumer, and they just say that it's the consumer's fault. If they don't handle it properly, it's their problem. Whereas that's completely the wrong attitude. I mean, but the thing is, consumers will go with the value. So if it's something that's cheap, they'll go for that. Whereas if they're actually using a material maybe that isn't single-use plastic, and they're using something a bit more ethical, or you know, more biodegradable or something like that, it's going to cost more. So then it does get down to the dollar value, and it's also
about awareness, consumer. Gary, because yeah. I don't think consumers are understanding some of that we've just yeah. highlighted today yeah. that you guys yeah. have brought to everyone's attention.
So it is partly the consumer. We have the power. We can vote with our feet and with our dollars for what we want. And it's only when you go into places like City Super, just down the road here, and you just see it. It's just a sea of plastic. And when you ask them, they say, oh, it's for hygiene reasons, and it's for this, that, and the other. Do we really need, you know, a banana wrapped in plastic? You don't. It's got its own natural wrapper, you know, but they're saying we do. And it's like, we need the public to start speaking up and saying, no, we don't want this anymore. We will vote with our feet if you don't listen to us, you know.
And I loved what you did with your son. I read about that.
Oh, where the
you
trash were... to checkout.
Yeah.
That was just to prove a point of how much trash was yes. just from one shopping. Yeah.
When you were unwrapping the plastic for the people that didn't see yes. the video that yes. went so viral.
We just basically did a shop in Fusion in Discovery Bay and unwrapped all the fruit at the counter and took the fruit and left the wrapper. And there was a massive pile of it, and respectfully, and said to the sort of manager there, you know, we don't need all this. Mm. We want this fruit. We don't need all this trays and plastic.
And really, the producer and the manufacturer, they really need to take up the responsibility, which we have been pushing for the producer responsibility scheme, which still, unfortunately, still have not been really implemented in Hong Kong.
So what is the scheme?
So basically, that scheme is to have this producer, manufacturer to take up some responsibility. For example, they need to commit to reduce unnecessary packaging and avoid using non-reusable materials in their product. Consider the reusability of products during the design process to maximize the product's lifespan, and also to provide incentive to encourage customers to recycle the company's product. For example, they have the reverse vending machine, instant collection system in convenient locations, which reward those who recycle. For example, you can get a coupon. So, excessive packaging, this issue is really serious in Hong Kong, particularly if you buy a box of candy. First, you have a plastic film, you open it, and then you found some paper box actually coated with plastic, very thin layer, and then open it, and then you found a tray of plastic, a plastic tray with the candy on top. And sometimes the candy will be sorted into different flavor, another plastic bag, and then later on you unwrap the plastic paper on top of the candy. Basically, you have like 6-7 layers of plastic, and these are just unnecessary and excessive. And these kind of manufacturers, they need to consider, is it necessary to have so many protective layer for just a candy, this type of product? And one, also I really think the beverage company, they need to take under consideration is, usually for example, like soda, for Coke, usually you can have aluminium can or plastic bottle, two types. Aluminium can, sometimes people think is inconvenient because once you open it, you need to finish drinking an entire can. That's why they go for plastic bottles, because you could screw the cap back, you can use anytime. But for example, if you go to supermarket, you can find aluminium bottle having the juice or coffee or also Coke or soda inside, but mainly manufactured by Japan. So basically, for the Hong Kong, this kind of soda beverage, they could also consider to use aluminium bottle, which is aluminium. It has, just like what Gary said, it has value for the collector, but you could also screw back. And this could be a very nice alternative for the plastic bottle. But sometimes when I talk to relevant people, say, why don't you just introduce it? Because it proves its work. You can find this kind of product in the market. They said, the cost. So sometimes I just feel a bit annoyed. We do have alternative in the market in the world, but the people just think because of the cost, no one is going to purchase this product and just forget it, just stick back with the plastic bottle. So I really think that that's why the Hong Kong government really should introduce this scheme in Hong Kong to force the producer and also the manufacturers to take up more responsibility in reducing the use of plastic.
So this is a scheme you're proposing to the government?
Well, everyone, it actually is everyone, because it has some countries that already have such scheme
happening. And what is the government's response?
Well, what Samantha's talking about, I believe, is like a deposit refund scheme. So that you put whatever, $1 deposit on a bottle, and then the consumer will bring that bottle back, whether they bring it back via a reverse vending machine, which is just the opposite of a normal vending machine. You put your bottle in, it gives you your dollar back, or you take it back to the grocery store, they give you your dollar back. This is in order to collect all of those recyclables, which is not presently happening. So this forces the consumer, or encourages the consumer, to actually bring back their plastic so it can then be recycled. So that's the producer responsibility scheme that Samantha was talking about. But in addition to the excessive packaging, there's a lot of other things that corporates could do with their design. So just talking about a plastic bottle, obviously I'm not a proponent of the plastic bottle, but the plastic bottle is here. And it usually comes with a number of different types of plastic in it. So the bottle itself is one type, usually PET. The lid is probably PE. All of those different types of plastic, then the label is another type of plastic. They all have to be separated out before they can be recycled properly. So you have the screw top, which leaves a little ring on your bottle, making it very difficult. So in the design process, if companies were taking these things into consideration, making things easier to recycle, that would help the process a lot. Using single types of plastic, not having a Tetra Pak style box, which is a composite material with three different layers, plastic, paper, and aluminium, which are very difficult to separate.
You need actually a special machine, right?
You need a whole process. Actually, one company has just won an award for coming up with designing a new type of composite material that's easy to come apart, which is excellent. This is the way we need to be moving. We need to have design ideas and innovations that make things easy, simple, cost-effective, not labor-intensive, to recycle.
But does the incentivizing need to come from just consumer act and activists, or the government?
The incentivizing needs to come from the government, unfortunately. It needs to come in the form of a levy, because if you don't, then you don't have an even playing ground. And this guy does it, this guy doesn't do it, so everybody's going to go to the guy who doesn't charge you. So you have to have an across-the-board even playing ground.
Also similar as plastic levy, if you don't, it's charged standardized, everyone take the plastic bag charged. And that's why the government also found that actually the plastic bags, the demand go lower. So you need to put it with dollar, the levy. Otherwise, the Hong Kong people, they will be lazy and they just don't care. But if even like the plastic bag levy is 50 cents, actually it's not much money, but people think, oh, it's money. So they will still try their best effort to try to reduce the use.
So you feel like that's been successful? Because I have to say, I'm actually often shocked standing at my grocery store how many people still will pay for the plastic bag. I'm constantly overwhelmed I'm thinking, really, today? You don't bring your own bag?
Well, if you look at the latest statistics from the government,
Hong Kong's government,
Hong Kong 2016 over 2015, our plastic bag, the proportion of plastic bags that are ending up in the landfill have increased. So we have more plastic bags in the landfill in 2016 than we did in 2015.
I've been thinking.
And it's the same thing for plastic bottles.
What is it? We throw away 5.2 million bottles a day?
Yes.
In Hong Kong,
the thing is, we as per capita, we create more trash than pretty much any other country on earth. And yet, when you actually look at Hong Kong, the way we live on top of each other in high rises. There is absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be leading the way in recycling. You know, Well, to be able to collect all the trash, you just have to go to the bottom of the building. And collect it all.
I see what you mean.
Rather than having to drive up everybody's driveway and pick up all the trash like other countries.
Oh, I see.
We live vertically, but most of us anyway, except for the wealthy. But yeah, we live vertically, and to be able to collect it, but then where does it go? Like Sam mentioned, there is no recycling in Hong Kong. It was all going to China. Now, we are sitting on a massive pool of reserves of cash the government have been announcing and saying about. That needs to be used, and we need to really incentivize people and businesses to start. You know, there's so much money in rubbish. You know, you ask any scrap metal dealer in any country in the world, they're all millionaires driving Ferraris because there's so much money in rubbish.
And so then
to
I have
start
to...
these companies up, there needs to be government initiatives. And
but so you know, I have to ask you, Gary, and you're all activists. You all have dialogues with the government. Okay, how do you incentivize the government?
The government feels that this is something that has to be handled by big business or small business, but it's business. It's not something for the government to necessarily be involved in. They don't.
So
want
the
to
laissez-faire capitalist kind of.
Well, it's yeah. Let the system work. But unfortunately, when plastic has such a low value, it affects how the system can work. So the government does actually have to be more involved than they are. And we have a lot, I mean, we're a small country. There's land issues, there's regulations on the land that is available, which makes it very difficult for facilities to be created in order to handle the waste. There's a lot of factors that are making it very difficult. So while Gary is correct, we should be able to collect everything, It has to make financial sense for some businessman. Mm-hmm. And right now, unfortunately, it doesn't make sense because we don't have the infrastructure to collect it. We don't have the factories, the places, the facilities to send it to. And then we have the problem of once we handle it here, where is it going to go? We don't have manufacturing. In Taiwan, they have manufacturing. So they can collect, they can recycle, and they can then use that material to manufacture. I wouldn't call it a closed loop, but it's a circular economy. They're using their own waste, mm-hmm. recycling it, and then putting it back into the industry. Whereas we don't have the industry here, mm-hmm. so it isn't. You can't compare. It's not as easy. Doesn't mean it can't be done.
But we also have a government that don't actually even acknowledge it's a serious problem.
Right.
That's one of the biggest issues. If you're in denial. You know,
can we go back to that? Actually, I'd like to talk about that point.
If you're in denial, then you're not going to fix any problems. So, you know, by saying, you know, there was a survey done, you know, a few years back about marine debris is not a serious issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, go to the beach, mate. Go and have a look.
So
it is a serious issue. We need to deal with it. But then again, now it's being pushed back onto the consumer and the corporations. They need to do it. The government's not our department, which is a typical Hong Kong way of saying things. It's not my department, not my problem, move it on. Whereas I see it as almost like when you have kids that misbehave, you have to just take it away from them. You know, when they're fighting over the toys or they're not using it properly, you take it away. And that initiative comes from the parents or from, in this case, the government. I think the government need to actually get a bit firmer and stop, you know, tiptoeing around, upsetting people.
But if we go back to the question of how do we incentivize the government, and I think, you know, running Green Queen for the last 7 years, one thing I've noticed is that people sometimes have trouble caring about the planet, but they care deeply about their own health and the health of their children. And this reminds me of a few weeks ago, I was at a round table and Craig Gleason was there. And he said that while he is the filmmaker that made the film A Plastic Oceans with the Plastic Oceans Foundation. We had invited him to be here, but he's not available. But basically what he said is that while he was making the documentary, what he realized is that the plastic in the oceans was a public health crisis. And so now he's working on a new film to raise awareness about all the plastic we've been talking about that's in the ocean, but that's also in our fish, in our food, in our soil, in our lungs. And I've always thought that that's a way to get people to move, because public health is the responsibility of the government in most countries. So what do you guys say to that?
Well, when we had the plastic pellet spill, we called an emergency meeting with all the government departments. We all sat around the table. It was myself, Tracy, Kevin Laurie, and every other government department. And we sat there and we're saying, we've got all this trash on the beach, all this plastic washing up, you know, the pellets and everything. This is a disaster, bum, 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 bum. And it was all just pretty much blank looks. It was only when Tracy pulled out a picture of a fish with plastic in its stomach that the government suddenly all went, oh, hang on, what?
Okay.
This could go
in a little issue.
They're not worried about it killing some seabirds or the dolphins or anything else. But hang on, this could actually end up in our food chain. So that's why one of the angles whenever I'm doing stuff is always make that connection.
Great.
Because as soon as you can see that this is ending up in what you eat, unless you're vegan, of course.
Right.
That's when people suddenly gets their attention.
Samantha, have you had conversations with people around you about the plastic in the food in our systems? Does it create a connection?
I do agree with you that using the angle of the food safety, health safety, that could much easier to connect people to the issue, because we conduct a lot of campaign. Usually, if you talk about raise awareness, this and that, people just blah blah blah. Okay, but if you link it to, for example, seafood, the culture fish with antibiotics go into your body. Or even we say one campaign is like in the supermarket, we have the door open and losing a lot of energy. But then we phrase it in an angle that actually if you don't close the door of the fridge, basically the milk can get warm and then get a lot of bacteria inside. Then the people start to be aware of, oh, it affects, it poses impact to my health issue. And that's why I need to close the door. And then that's why then we link to the reduction of carbon emission. And a lot of people, sometimes they neglect one fact, which is microplastic. Basically, they are the bacteria carrier because they are so small. The surface, to area ratio, the volume ratio the ratio is so large. So, and also plastic is very easy to have the bacteria, heavy metal, the organic matter stick onto the plastic. So if you kind of like travel around the sea, basically it's a carrier of this kind of harmful substance. With the fish, they fit in. This substance, the fish may just feel a little bit upset with the stomach, the guts, but this kind of substance, bacteria, heavy metal, organic matter, they will just all go to the fish body, particularly stored in the fat tissue, like the skin, the fatty part. And then people, we like to eat fatty food, the fish,
right.
Then actually this kind of organic matter, heavy metal will all pass to the human body. People cannot really think about this, they just think, okay, basically even have the fish, they have plastic inside, oh, I just don't avoid to eat their guts, I just throw away. The plastic will not just go into my body, but they neglect the fact that bacteria, this kind of organic substance will go to the body through this kind of bioaccumulation process. So it does provide, it does have a lot of impact. Particularly plastic, it's also notorious to have the BPA, this different kind of
endocrine disruptors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's why nowadays a lot of people also think that why people can get sick or get cancer, get different diseases that easily. That could be
linked
over
to
the year toxin accumulation to the body. So this certainly is a really great health threat or impact.
Absolutely. I think people have made the connection with food, they've made the connection with care products, they've made the connection with cleaning products, but not yet the connection strongly enough with everything from the ocean.
So the government's response after the pellet spill was to form an interdepartmental organization called Clean Shorelines, which was fantastic. It's the first time the government ever came together from multi-departments to work on a problem, which was a great start. And unfortunately, the Department of Health is not on that committee. So perhaps this is the way that we can get some more attention put onto this problem by suggesting that the Department of Health needs to join this task force, this Clean Shorelines, which is focusing on marine pollution.
I don't know. I've always felt that when you're trying to get a point across, people's personal health and the health of their children, very much on the children, because everyone in Hong Kong cares about their children. You know, if you tell them that their kid won't be smart if they eat this food that's got toxin in it, they're going to change their behavior. They're going to find the money to buy the more expensive product.
It is overwhelming, like hearing that. I don't know if I want to go cry in a corner or if I still want to be that optimistic and idealistic person that I usually am and feel like, yeah, but there has to be change, right? There has to be progress. there has to be something I can do on a personal level to make a contribution if Hong Kong government doesn't step up in that very minute, right? So do you have any advice for me, I guess? Something that we could all do?
We don't really have a choice. That's the thing. We don't have a choice. It's mm-hmm. not a case of should we do something or not. It's mm-hmm. like we don't have that choice. We have to do something. And it's down to everybody, just any little thing that anybody can do makes a big difference. And if people don't think that's the truth, then, you know, we're fighting a really hard battle. But even just one little thing, you know, stop using straws, plastic straws, stop using plastic cups, you know. Say no lid. I mean, even if you do have to have a takeaway coffee and you haven't got a takeaway cup, you know, a reusable cup, just say no lid. I mean, that alone just stops one extra piece of plastic, you know. So it's just all these tiny little things. But if 10,000 people said no lids, that's a hell of a lot of lids, you know. That's just one thing.
I never considered that.
You know?
No lid.
Yeah.
Topless. Go
yeah.
topless.
Yeah, go
sleeveless
go
too,
topless.
Huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to recommend going topless, as it is International Day of Women.
So go topless. Yeah. Stop mopping. I think we have some good ones, guys. what do you two think? What can people do?
Well, in addition to reducing every single thing, you know, try and just pick one thing, make a change. In addition to that, though, use your voice. Write to the government, write to the grocery store, tell the restaurant at the corner that you don't want to use their plastic straws anymore and you or don't want a straw at all, or at minimum, you know, get me a paper straw. Use your voice. We're the consumers. We have control. We need to tell people what we want and what we don't want.
Yeah, for me, I totally agree with Gary and Dana. And one thing is, I think everyone could be a fighter. But you could be of different level. Some, if for example, you could do a lot. For example, you could do without. You could ask no straw, no bags, and even you could have a almost plastic-free lifestyle. That would be great. But sometimes just don't go too extreme. Asking your friend, hey Dana, don't wear a synthetic shirt anymore. It is impossible because sometimes plastic is good, but sometimes also evil. It depends on how we use it. So. Just like Dennis said, just do one thing at a time. But then you kind of encourage people not kind of doing very extreme, like, oh, you do this and there's a lot of plastic. Oh, you generate one plastic bag a day. We don't want to be too extreme to discourage people not to use plastic. But you could encourage them. Well, it's great that I start to see you stop using straw. So just encourage people slowly, and then their attitude will change slowly, and then they will do more and more. But just don't do it kind of like abruptly at the same time.
Positive reinforcement. Everyone's a fighter. I think we've got your taglines for all of you. Thank you so much. What an incredible discussion. We're privileged to have listened to it from such true activists that are really doing something every day and making a difference. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to Garage again for hosting us, and thank you to Regina for getting this in motion.
Thank you for having me as well.
Tune in a couple weeks. We're doing episode 2, which is going to be all about recycling in Hong Kong. We're very, very fortunate. We've got Mr. Paul Zimmerman, the Southern District Councilor and a real friend to the environment in Hong Kong. We've also got Philippe from one of the people who runs Hong Kong Recycles, an absolute expert on everything recycling in Hong Kong. I think we're going to be opening a lot of eyes. We've touched on some of the subjects today, but obviously recycling in Hong Kong is not where it needs to be, and I think we need a rundown of the status quo. So that's what's coming up next. Thank you so much, everyone.
Nice.
Happy International Women's Day.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.